This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming Invest Talk podcast.
Let's go talk to Sammy. He is in San Francisco. He wants to talk about investment books.
Yeah. Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. So the question I have for you is I have two teenagers at home, 15 years and 18 years old. Or the one who's 18 is going to the college soon. And I just found that she does not understand the basic, personal finance, and all of that. So do you have a recommendation on a book that I can buy?
A lot of people don't know this, but we actually have a book section on our site, book recommendations. So I would head over there and, see which ones you think might hit for her, might get her interested. There's some classics like Creative Destruction, Extraordinarily Popular Delusions of the Madness of Crowds, Principles by Ray Dalio, etc. Those are some classics. There's also a fundamental analysis section like The Intelligent Investor and more. We also have technical analysis section and an economic section. So basic economics, how the economy grows by Peter Schiff, The Wealth of Nations, Rise of America. There's a lot of good ones over there that I think are good. And then there's some personal finance ones like The Millionaire Next Door, et cetera. So I would encourage you to head over there and try to find some.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Kevin from Southern California. I have kind of a theoretical question. When holding stock or investing in a foreign company, would you have more protection holding the ADR of a company or buying shares directly on a foreign exchange in the theoretical event of like most extreme event where a country gets invaded by a hostile entity? Would either an ADR or having shares directly provide you as a investor any protection or any more protection over the other? Thank you for your thoughts, as always.
Yeah, so an ADR, an American depository receipt, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's held within an American bank, it's just what it's called, is essentially a way for you to get access to an international security without having to buy the local share. But each ADR is backed by local shares. Right? It's not that the shares outstanding of the company grow. They're backed by local shares. So if you have a problem politically, right, your political problem being the country getting invaded within a country, no matter what share line you hold for that business, you're going to bear that risk equally. Now, the benefit of holding an ADR is it cuts through the complexity of owning international investments. You also have instantaneous currency exposure, right? You're trading in dollars versus trading in the local currency. But in terms of safety, from holding an ADR rather a local line, doesn't make a difference. Thanks for the call.
Hi, InvestTalk. I had a question about buying into a credit card company. So Visa, MasterCard, or American Express were the three that were on my watch list. So my question is, do you have a preferred from those three company that you would allocate money towards? Or do you feel like it could even be good just to dollar cost average into the three of them evenly, not to some like super high weight in my portfolio, but just to have some exposure? I just see them as a triopoly. And also with the expenses that the cards charge, it just seems like they'll always have like that income. I also was curious your take on American Express. I know they charge higher fees to merchants, but they also don't have as many people probably who qualify for the card just because it requires a higher credit score. If that has any influence on your decision to my first question, I know that's a lot, but I'm very interested to see what you guys say. So I'll listen on the show, and thank you, as always.
Let me start off with saying that you have to look at American Express very different than Visa and MasterCard. And a lot of people think that Visa and MasterCard, they're credit card companies. They are not credit card companies. They are payment networks. Visa and MasterCard do not take any credit risk. They process payments. That's it. And they partner with banks to issue credit cards. American Express has their own payment network, but they also take credit risk. In many ways, American Express is kind of a hybrid between a Visa or MasterCard and, say, a Capital One. Well, now Capital One is actually joining the ranks of American Express because they bought Discover, because now they have, same thing, a payments network along with taking that credit risk that they typically do. Now, there are other credit card companies out there that are pure lenders, and Capital One used to be that. So you have to look at these very different. Here's my issue with Visa and MasterCard is that look at what's happening in crypto, look what's happening with Zelle and Venmo. They're becoming more options, more payment processing options out there. While Visa and MasterCard are still dominant, there's likely to be a more powerful new entrant with Capital One, right, using the Discover payment rails and network to expand their market share of payments. And so I worry a bit about that. I think there's a lot of potential issues there. There's regulatory risk here. There's already been that with, what regulation has come down with debit card fees, for example. And, you know, both sides of the aisle are becoming more populous from an economic perspective. And so I could easily see coming down there. And Visa, MasterCard, they trade at, pretty high multiples and pretty high valuations because they're quality businesses. But I do think there are a lot of risks there. And earnings for Visa and MasterCard are continuing to come down. So I actually like the companies like American Express or now Capital One that do a bit of both, right? You still have, you're taking the credit risk, and that is a very profitable business. And near term, while the economy is weakening a little bit, it's generally people have jobs and defaults on credit cards are still relatively low and consumer balance sheets are relatively healthy. That's my take. And hopefully that gave you some clarity on that space.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about H&E Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
InvestTalk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
This is a special InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Good morning. This is Randy, the Iowa trucker. First thing off, somewhat belated, but I couldn't bring myself to it, is deepest sympathies for Steve's family and all of you there at InvestTalk. I always thought he sounded like such a decent human being. I have a couple of questions. One very simple. What level of assets under management do you want before someone can hire you to manage their investments? I don't have a lot yet, but my goal is to get to where I can because I clearly know what you're doing. My second question is a little more involved. As a truck driver, by the time my day is over, the brain just doesn't work at trying to look up fundamentals and charts and so on. I try and I gain some, but not gaining fast enough. So I'm thinking of switching to ETFs. What type of ETFs, what sectors do you feel have the best potential at this time? I hope that's all clear. Thank you very much. And you have a great program. Don't ever stop doing it.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback and your trust that we built trust with you. And hopefully you do become a client one day. Our minimum is $150,000. Some of our strategies are minimum are $250,000. So typically it depends on the client and what the goals are. That's for all of you out there. And, if you're looking for ETFs though right now, and we say this is it's not a bad way to go if you don't have enough money to work with an advisor like us, but is to invest in ETFs and you could go just plain vanilla, right? SPY. You know, you probably know if you listen to it for a while, you know, we don't love the asset mix or sector mix in the SPY right now, mainly because it's so tech heavy. And that's why, you know, small caps are up as of late, as I said at the top of the show, over the past month, and large caps are down. So how do you avoid that? Well, you could buy a value-based ETF. There are a lot of value-focused ETFs out there. But a better way is to, you know, gain exposure to particular sectors. We like industrials. We like materials. We like energy right now after this recent pullback. And the financials are pretty solid. We don't love the smaller banks, but, you know, it depends on the ETF, you know, what kind of exposure to financials they have. There's different parts of the market that are strong, but you have to kind of monitor it. I think that's the issue with getting sector specific is, while that is the trend now, are they going to be as attractive 6 months, 12 months, 18 months from now? Probably not. Some of them might not be. So for you, I probably wouldn't go a sector ETF. I would just go looking for a value-based ETF that has that value factor tilt to it. Thanks for the call.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Wesley from Southern California, who has a question about Roth IRAs.
My question is about asset allocation moving forward. I know we're moving into small caps, and I'm wondering, in a 401k, what would be the best allocation you would think for the next couple months?
For the next couple months? Well, here's the thing.
Or a year.
That brings up an interesting point here. When you think about bucketing your assets, you bucket them based on the time horizon. And so your brokerage account is probably going to be the most liquid part, because maybe you're using that money to save for a house, or you have some impending payment or whatever. Now, your retirement account is your long-term, long horizon. Certainly if you're older, you sound like a young guy, but certainly if you're older, the horizon isn't as short. But for your 401k, I wouldn't generally try and do short-term trading, right? People always complain when the market goes down. Some of my friends complain when the market's down. And I'm like, you guys, you're in your 30s. You should want the market to be down. This is a time where you want to invest your money. You want the market to be going down when you're accumulating, and you want the market to be at highs when you're withdrawing. So, you know, I would advise generally against, within your 401k, which is a longer time horizon, trying to get too cute and make some short-term trades. Now, from an overall investing perspective, this is an election year. Election year means volatility. So generally speaking, if you're a more risk averse person, I would probably be allocating towards lower volatility sectors. But again, this is your long-term horizon. You know, don't try and get too cute here. This should be an area where you allocate towards those securities that tend to outperform in the long term, value-oriented securities. You know, mid-caps are a great place to be in as well. Thanks for the call.
Now, I've been telling your friends that the InvestTalk podcast is available in video form over on our YouTube channel, and we are going to take a quick question. Now, Mike Matthews says, Justin, on yesterday's show, you strongly advised against annuities. I've heard you and other CFPs saying the same thing. What if you already have a portfolio of stocks and you keep a smaller amount of money in an annuity as a rainy day fund? In other words, if everything else goes pear-shaped, you've got something insured that will always be there for you no matter what happens in markets. This would be a small amount. The majority of your investments are overall in the stock market. Would a small amount be okay in an annuity, or should even that be put into a different investment tool? And which one? The simple answer is liquidity, right? Annuities, they're not liquid. So if you're talking about a rainy day fund, how are you going to tap that? Okay. Now, there might be some where you say, oh, you can borrow against it, right? They do that with the whole or universal life policies. Oh, you can borrow against it. You can be your own bank. No, it's dumb. Okay, if you want a rainy day fund, go buy short-term treasuries. That's safe. You have no currency risk because it's in dollars. Your expenses are probably in dollars, right? You're getting some, right? That rate might come down in the near term, but that's a rainy day fund. It's going to earn what cash earns, okay? But it's not going to be volatile, and you're going to have that. If everything goes pear-shaped, you have that. And what I'm consistently saying over the past few years is learn about what happened in 08, what happened during COVID, and the response to that. And tell me whether the government is going to allow those types of situations to spiral out of control, or are they going to err on the side of creating more inflation? Remember, having cash, having safety assets, okay, that are insured from a big drop, that is an insurance from a deflationary bust. And do you think that the government can allow a deflationary bust without bankrupting the whole, you know, treasury? The answer is simply no. And so actually the risk is on the upside that things will go into a crack up boom. And I think that's what we're in. Hope that helps.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Just had a quick question for you. Wondering if we should be investing in other exchanges and how exactly we would go about doing that. So obviously I'm invested in a bunch of international companies or international stocks through the New York Stock Exchange or the exchanges we have available here in the U.S. For diversification purposes, are there others outside of the U.S., other exchanges that we should be looking at trading stocks on? Appreciate any information or any thoughts you may have on it. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, well, we talked about one of the ways that you can invest in other markets earlier through ADRs on U.S. exchanges. I think that's the easiest way to do it. It kind of helps with that currency exposure as well, because it's instantaneously priced in to the value of the ADR. You can invest in international ETFs. I think when you're talking about emerging markets, the best thing to do is to invest in ETFs that trade within the US that invest in those emerging markets, because there's a layer of complexity there, right? Certain markets have requirements around foreign ownership limits that the ETF companies are going to take into consideration. They have requirements around the complexity of regulations surrounding addresses for custodying these accounts. There's a lot of complexity there. And so I think for retail investors, generally, the best way to invest in international markets is looking at certain funds or ADRs through U.S. exchanges, just because it eliminates the layer of complexity. And certainly given the outsized returns of U.S. stocks, U.S. equities over the past couple of years, there's a lot of value out there internationally. So I applaud that you're looking beyond the United States and keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for the call.
A quick reminder, if there's a term that you hear mentioned on the program but you're unclear about what it means or you have a question about it, we want you to ask. It's very likely that you're not the only one with that same question. 888-99-CHART.
West from Nevada, and you want to talk about profits?
I've never heard you guys talk about your philosophy or strategy for taking profits.
Well, you always, number one, it's having a target price, a valuation where this is no longer cheap, that maybe the valuations are a bit rich. And at that point, you probably at least want to trim your position. That's typically what we will do, rebalance the position. And then at a certain point, if it gets, you know, egregiously overpriced, then, and all of those potential growth is pulled forward. I think of Nvidia right now. You know, Nvidia had all this these high expectations built into it, and now that's kind of coming off. And you know, it's pretty clear that they were never going to reach those levels of growth. If you ever get to that point and you own the stock, you need to have the discipline to recognize that. Now, on the downside, you know, usually there are support levels, and you could have a trailing stop. Sometimes we have that. We look at momentum in relation to the broader market, to that particular sector. And if it is no longer leading that sector, it's no longer performing well compared to the broader market, then that could also be another reason to take your profits. So that is a hard thing. Buying is easy. Everybody can go buy a stock. It's extremely easy to do that. But you're right. It's a great question, because one of the hardest things is when to sell. Most people, when things are going well, they don't even think about selling. You know, they only think about selling when things are going poorly. And that's why most people do bad. They don't do well, right? It's because they don't have the discipline to trim when valuations get a bit rich. They don't have the discipline to sell when the technicals are deteriorating. They wait until things get really bad and, you know, you can't take it anymore and emotions kick in and you sell at the bottom. And that's how most people sell. So great question. I love that question. And hopefully that gave you some insight and in how to think about taking those profits. Thanks for the call, Wes.
Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's grab another InvestTalk voice bank question.
My question is, if an insider purchases $5 million worth of stock, but his net worth is $650 million, does his purchase tell you that he has serious conviction in the stock? Or does it tell you maybe he bought it only for cosmetic purposes? Assuming all things are equal, would a $5 million purchase from an insider catch your attention? Thanks. Love the show.
$1 million purchase from an insider who is worth $600 million tells me nothing more than that he purchased $5 million worth of shares. I think sometimes too much is made of insider transactions. I would find it odd if there was an executive who decided to purchase shares on the open market rather than just have it part of his compensation package, but that's another part of it. But let's look at the other side, right? If it's insiders are selling shares. Well, certainly if I worked for NVIDIA and I had stock grants over the past 10 years, I'd be selling them at the highs too. If I'm Jeff Bezos and a lot of my net worth is tied up in Amazon stock, just because he is selling down, is that an indication that he doesn't believe in the Amazon stock? Or is that just an indication that he is trying to spend some money? You know, I think too often people try and use insider transactions as a signal and a singular signal rather than a complementary signal. And that's not to say if you have a bunch of insiders that are selling a bunch of shares, then maybe there's something going on there. And on the counter to that, I actually think that having compensation for executives be tied to stock-based compensation is a good thing. To a certain extent, it can be bad if the vesting period is too early. It can disincentivize longer-term growth relative to short-term growth, right? The whole idea of managers, of corporate managers, is you want to incentivize them to grow the company long-term. But giving a stake in the company to those people that run it, I think that's a great idea. So don't read too much into it. It can mean something, oftentimes means nothing. Thanks for the call.
This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
I have a special message for InvestTalk listeners. I want to tell you about a smart investment known as term life insurance. Here at InvestTalk, we are big fans of term life insurance for those that need to protect loved ones. Unfortunately, many people get tricked into purchasing whole or universal life when a simpler solution like term life insurance is far superior. With that said, let me focus on Fabric by Gerber Life. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered right from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Fabric helps make protecting your family's financial future a little easier with a term life policy that is affordable and can be customized to your family's needs. Listen, if you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Remember, your children are depending on you. Getting Fabric is very easy. It is a 100% digital experience. There are no unnecessary medical exams. And Fabric even comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. If needed, you can cancel anytime. So build a plan that's tailored to your needs, with coverage ranging from $100,000 up to $5 million. With some plans, you can purchase $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. You'll see prices from as low as $7.86 per month. Term lengths from 10 to 30 years. Apply online now or in the app. And if you need a hand, their licensed team is standing by. Fabric, F-A-B-R-I-C. Now they've partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families for over 50 years. So join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
This is a special Invest Talk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Remember, the Invest Talk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART.
Now, this is Invest Talk. Let's play another caller question. You know the number? 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. John here from Central Florida. I know you guys have discussed this topic many a times in the past, but at this point where I am, I'm leaning strongly towards rolling my traditional 401k to a Roth 401k through my employer. They made this option available a few years ago, and I've just been kind of tossing it around for a while. And now I feel like it's the time. I feel confident about it's the right move for me. But I personally do not anticipate taxes to be any lower than they are now within probably the next century. So what sort of fees and at what magnitude should I expect to pay when I make this transfer? And will they all be at the time of transfer, or how does that work as well? Just wanted to get your professional opinion on this matter. Thank you, and I look forward to hearing your answer.
Well, there's no fees to convert typically an IRA to a Roth IRA or 401k to a Roth 401k. Typically not fees to do that. Maybe the provider might charge that, but you know, Schwab doesn't charge that, at least for us when we're doing those Roth conversions for our clients. But from a tax perspective, that's a CPA question. I don't know your tax rate, and I don't know your income, how much you're doing, what's going to put you in a different tax bracket. And this actually, I would not do this until you build a financial plan. This is something we do for clients. It's part of our service, is building out a full financial plan and planning Roth conversions. This is extremely important because this is one of the lowest hanging fruit anybody can do. Is plan your Roth conversion strategy. Because when you're converting from a traditional IRA or Roth or traditional IRA or 401k to a Roth 401k or Roth IRA, it's all about your tax rate today upon that conversion versus what is likely to be in the future. For the vast majority of people, the best time to do it will be the year they retire. They're fully retired, meaning no work income that year, and the time that they take Social Security, because you're going to be in a very, very low tax bracket, and you can fill that all the way up to maybe 12%, maybe 20%, depends on how much money you have, tax situation, whether you live in a taxable state, et cetera, what your longer term goals are. And that's a sweet spot for most people to do those Roth conversions, so that when they hit RMD at 73, 74, they aren't taking out vast sums, pushing them into a higher tax bracket. It's controlling that tax rate. And I like that you're thinking about it, but there's no chance that anybody, including myself, can give you that advice simply based on a phone call like this. This takes a financial plan. These are things where, sorry, your robo-advisor is not going to help. You need an advisor, ideally a financial advisor that can have the tools. We have the tools. We use Orion Planning. We use Orion for our client reporting, as well as our financial planning software, and it has these great tools, among many others. And so when you call and ask about that, I can't give you an answer. You know, if you're a client, we'd run you through this, and we plan that out, as we do with most of our clients. So certainly great to be thinking about, but not something that anybody can answer like that. It takes a process. Thanks for the call.
Now let's dip back into the InvestTalk voice bank. Here comes a question from 888-99-CHART.
Luke, have a question for you. I accidentally timed the market. I converted a 401k, rolled it over to a IRA, and just by accident, it occurred last Friday. And so I have a chunk of money sitting in my new IRA, and I'm wondering, what should I do? Should I roll it back into where I had it previously, which was the majority of the S&P 500, or should I put it in a little bit at a time? Anyway, any help would be great. Love your show. Thanks. Have a good day.
Well, my condolences for inadvertently timing the market. I think we're all susceptible to that from time to time. Maybe you need to draw down on your savings for a big purchase and you happen to have to do it at the worst time. You know, I would say a couple of things here. One is, should the rotation away from large cap tech, a lot of what's driven secular growth over the past 18 months, follow through? Probably the S&P 500 is going to be a little overweight some of the names that are going to underperform, at least in the near term. And that's not saying anything about the medium to long term, but certainly in the near term. Another thing I want to push back on is market downturn. It certainly could be a market downturn, but it could certainly also not be a market downturn. Every economics student who takes a class in college on economics has to learn about Malkiel and random walk theory and how daily prices in securities are essentially a random walk. Right? Longer term trends, and I don't mean longer term being 8 days, are things that can extrapolate what is happening within the market. Is the universe significantly different today than it was 2 weeks ago? Maybe we've learned a little bit more about what CapEx has done with tech companies in terms of revenues that haven't really manifested themselves in AI, certainly. But I would pare back my reaction in terms of a couple days of trading down being a market downturn. Again, it could be. We could be heading for lower lows. We could be. We certainly could be. My main point is don't draw conclusions yet based upon shorter term moves. Now, with that being said, historically speaking, empirically speaking, if you invest in the market at the all-time highs, you have positive expected return. And one way to protect yourself when you're trying to invest in the market is to do it a little bit at a time, dollar cost average in. So certainly, I don't see anything that looks to be systematically stressing the market here, though typically you don't see the things that systematically stress the market. But when you do get back into the market, yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing it piece by piece, dollar cost average in, potentially lower your cost basis, but not be left behind should the markets roar higher. Thanks for the call.
Now, from time to time, we receive questions via the comment section on our YouTube channel, and let's get to one now. Gikiro Boss, that's the handle. I am a software engineer, and my portfolio only has Microsoft, Amazon, and Adobe RSUs. You probably work for all three. I'm looking for your thoughts on diversifying my portfolio. Are there any ways in which I can save taxes on capital gains when selling these RSUs and buying other stocks? Thanks for the great show. Now, this would only apply if you probably have around $1 million or more in these in the stocks, which potentially you do, depending on how high I paid you are, price appreciation, etc. But a deferred sales trust is probably a way to do that. Defer those taxes, start diversifying the portfolio. And this goes for anybody who's has a business they're selling. It goes for anybody who has real estate that's highly appreciated. They don't want to take those capital gains, but they also don't want to do a 1031 exchange. Deferred sales trust, it's a great structure. You can buy a life insurance policy with the proceeds and still give the money to your heirs through that life insurance, etc. So it's a really great tool. That's probably the only way to do it. It does have some expenses to set up. That's why it's usually when you only have $1 million or more in assets, but hopefully you do between Microsoft, Amazon, and Adobe. And I like what you're thinking there to try to limit the tax basis or tax hit in any given year. This can spread that out potentially as well. So I would reach out to me, set up a call, and we can discuss a little more details on that. But that'd be the only way I see to lower that tax burden, or let's say defer that tax burden and potentially lower it, as well as diversify your portfolio, which you're thinking about in a very smart way.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where each Friday, subscribers to the KPP Premium newsletter receive a concise and highly informative summary of the week's financial and investment news, sent directly to their inbox. It really does give you a week that was roundup in a quick read. It also offers a look ahead and various process and term explanations that will be interesting to every investor. So you should be thinking about subscribing. You'll get targeted value formatted for fast consumption when you become a KPP Premium newsletter subscriber at investtalk.com. The InvestTalk Radio and Podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Tracy in San Jose, who has a question about balancing a portfolio.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to see how much, what percentage would you allocate to the high-tech sectors? I mean, right now, I have about 12% in the high-tech sector and for individual stocks, and about 13% for SDY. And what would you recommend?
Yes, that's a good question. You know, I like to use the market as a reference point for a starting point, right? So if you're building a portfolio, you're constructing a portfolio, I like to say, what does the U.S. market look like? And so if you look at the Russell 3000, tech is about 37% of it. Now, once you know what the market looks like, that's when you start making your active weight decisions based upon your opinions, right? Is your investment philosophy tilting towards value? You'd probably want to go lower on tech. You'd want to go higher on industrials. You'd want to go higher on financial names, so on and so forth. But I think a great starting point when constructing a portfolio is looking at the market overall. So you said that you have 12% in tech, and then what's your weight in the S&P 500?
I have an individual stocks, about 12% in tech, about 13% in SPY.
Okay. So if you have 13% in SPY, then that means that you have roughly 17% of your overall portfolio, based upon your description to me, is in tech. So that means you are currently 20% underweight the market as a whole in tech, which I don't think is crazy. I think that what we've seen is this rotation out of tech into some of those small value names. The momentum's falling, growth is falling, value's doing very well. But you should be aware that you're pretty underweight tech relative to the market. I tend to want to stick to 10 to 15% on either range. So that would be bumping up your tech exposure by roughly 7%. But again, you know, market dynamics are kind of telling us that there's a little bit of a rotation out of here. But I would still say that you're a little bit underweight tech relative to what I would be in your situation. But that's only about 5 to 7% there. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Now let's dip into our InvestTalk YouTube channel question bank. And here's one that came in from user, a bunch of numbers and letters put together. We'll say that. And it's about Edward Jones. It says, what's wrong with Edward Jones? Well, Edward Jones, last time I checked, is not a publicly traded company. So maybe the question is, what's wrong with Edward Jones, the business? And historically, there's been some issues with Edward Jones. There's been some criticism of their business practices in terms of the fees they give, or the high loaded fees they use for mutual funds, high upfront fees rather, on mutual funds that they give to their clients. There's been some legal issues surrounding Edward Jones with some kickbacks for mutual fund recommendations. And there's a lot of ongoing concern as they've shifted their business practice from going towards for ultra high net worth individuals and not really tailoring solutions as much to people below that category. And so maybe I'll take this back and say the problem with Edward Jones seems to be the problem with a lot of large shops with vast networks and advisor pools that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes don't have incentives that align with the incentives of their clients. So when you're looking for advisors, when you're looking for business relationships, one of the most important things is to make sure that the incentives of who you're employing align with the incentives of your portfolio. Because you have to remember that oftentimes a lot of strategies in rising markets will rise and in falling markets will fall. And the thing that really eats away at your return is the cost there. So it's important to see, it's important to know what they're selling you, what they're putting in your portfolio, and how much it costs.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. InvestTalk is a free download, 24/7, rain or shine. The InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's keep things pushing ahead and play another listener question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke or Justin. Nick from New York. Just giving a call out to you. I called last week regarding a question with 401s, 457s, and the limited range of options that are available through my employer. So just as a follow-up, I gave a call to the holder of the accounts, and I tried to see if there was a possibility or any rules about rolling over, to which they said that I really can only roll over an account outside of the agency if I retire or am terminated. So I just wanted to kind of, as a follow-up, ask you, you know, what else can I do?
I'm considering not making any more deposits into that account and perhaps opening up a new account. And I'm sure we could talk more specifically about my situation one-on-one, but I just wanted to hear a little bit more about your new 401k and 457 investing that is sponsored by you guys. Thank you for your show. Looking forward to hearing it on the podcast.
Great question. So yeah, usually if you're contributing to your retirement plan at work, then you have to keep it there until you're 59 and a half. Then you can do what is called an in-service rollover into an IRA. And almost everybody should do that, because then it opens you up to a lot more investment options. And typically you have costs associated with actually that 401k going. And many times the employees are burdened with that cost. Every plan is different, but be aware of that. So that's ideal. If you can roll it into an IRA, whether that is with an advisor like us or just doing it on your own at a big broker, like, you know, an E-Trade, a Fidelity, a Schwab, et cetera. So that's the best option. Now, the second best option is to, you know, have somebody like us manage it. We can do that now through a new piece of software we've deployed. Allows us to see all the investment options, rank them, analyze them, target particular risk levels based on the risk questionnaire that we give our clients. And then from there, also build out a full financial plan to see how that would apply to the full situation. So I think that's it's groundbreaking. You know, this is something this is like the holy grail we've been trying to do for my entire investment career, saying, okay, how can we help these people who have 401ks, 457s, 403bs, even 529s, where they have limited options, but they also don't have the ability to analyze these funds and understand which ones they should be in, what mix they should be in based on their risk tolerance level, based on the market trends, et cetera. And now we're able to do that. So that's really cool. So that's a little bit more about that particular strategy. But hopefully at 59 and a half, you know, eventually roll that into an IRA.
You are listening to an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART. This is an InvestTalk Best of Caller Questions compilation program. Your comments and questions are always welcome. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-99-CHART.
Now, hope you're telling your friends about the InvestTalk audio podcast being available in video form, where I share my charts and data for the stocks that I'm looking at. And we get questions submitted in the comment section over there, so I encourage you to check that out. And Priya Lori 9485 says, do y'all have an opinion on dual direction funds? I love this question because I had never heard of a dual direction fund. I'm like, what is this? I've never heard this. Okay. It's a dual direction buffered index strategy. It takes advantage of market's growth up to a predetermined cap rate and enjoys a certain level of buffer protection against market losses. This is just a structured product, and they're slapping a new name on it. I can just imagine what they were doing in the marketing boardrooms. What are we going to call it? How do we get people to buy more and get interested in it? Let's call it a dual direction. It goes both ways, but you know, you're capped on the upside, and you're, you know, I just can see all of these marketing jargon that they're throwing around and trying to get people to buy these things that frankly are very high fee and don't really do what you want to do. It's kind of like an annuity, really, with a new name. You know, they're a little simpler. There's usually a defined end date, et cetera. But the fees within them tend to be very high. So this is just a marketing gimmick. And it makes me say, know what you own. Don't just go based on the title of things. I see this all the time, whether it's an ETF, whether it's a mutual fund, whether it is a structured product like this. They title it something and then the buyer thinks that's exactly what they're getting. And the devil is in the details. And oftentimes it's very different than and doesn't really pencil out. So these things are just marketing gimmicks and don't really have a place in anyone's portfolio.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial. InvestTalk listeners and KPP clients alike are invited to take advantage of the many products and services of KPP Financial. For example, the InvestTalk radio program and its podcast replays, the new online training experience, InvestTalk Academy, and the KPP Premium newsletter distributed to subscribers each Friday. Learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The phone lines are open now, and you can call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke, Bill from Philadelphia. Question about expense ratios for products such as ETFs. How do they work? Is basically the question. Is it like a one-time fee? Do you say it's a 10 basis point expense ratio? Is that charged by, say, a Vanguard yearly, monthly, when you first buy, when you sell? Because if you hold it for long term, I would imagine they charge the expense ratio one time annually and so forth. Just wanted to get some clarification on that to know exactly what I'm paying. Thanks for what you guys do, and I appreciate you guys.
So the question is about how expense ratios work in funds, and it's a little complicated, so I'll try and explain it as simplistically as possible. And so when you have a mutual fund or you have an ETF, your purchase price is what's called a NAV, a net asset value. And legally speaking, the net asset value is supposed to be a fair value representation of the assets of the fund. And so when you see a dollar price, that is a per share representation of the asset value of the fund. Now, the NAV that you see isn't exactly the value of the assets in the fund. And that's not just because sometimes you make fair value adjustments because certain markets are closed, whatever. The reason why is because on a daily basis, daily, fund expenses are accrued. So when you see that 10 basis points expense ratio, you take that 10 basis points, you split it out over every day of the year, and daily, based on the total value of the fund, you get what's called an accrued fee. And so you don't see the accrued fees. You never actually view yourself paying these accrued fees, but think of it as like the accrued fees going into a separate just book account that the money doesn't really go anywhere, but it doesn't link to your NAV anymore. And so on a daily basis, as the days go on, that net asset value that you see on the market is being reduced daily by the expense ratio. And so all of the cash, all of the assets are still in the fund until they're generally, I think it depends, sometimes taken out quarterly, sometimes taken out annually. But all the assets are still there, but it's as if they're not there for you. And that's why the value adjusts when you look at it at the daily price of the fund. And so to answer your question, expenses accrue daily. You won't see them really on these ETFs when you buy or sell them. And that's because the adjustment is already made for you. It's already in that cost. It's not something that'll come out of it. It's not something extra. Hope that adds some clarity. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.